Hello, and once again, welcome to the Vegan Rainbow Show. This is Bill Houston, and I'm here with... Say that one more time.
Mike Kudak.
Hey there, Mike. Now that your mic is on. Mike with the mic on. So, what do you know, Mike?
Well, we have a really exciting show today, Bill. We're going to have a couple of guests talking about mad cow disease.
Cool. So... Mad cow disease. Just briefly, tell us who our guests are.
Well, we're going to be speaking with Dave Louthan, who is the slaughterhouse worker who killed the mad cow in Washington State.
Oh, man, you have a way of digging up the really interesting guests there, Mike.
And then we'll be speaking with Dr. Michael Greger, who is a national expert on the subject of mad cow disease. I'd like to say a few words, though, before we get to Dave, about mad cow disease for our listeners who may not be as well informed as they could be. Let me just give a little bit of background about mad cow disease.
Sure.
This disease has been around now for several years, since at least the mid-1980s, but hasn't really shown up in the United States until just last December. The disease is more formally known as bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE. The current thinking on what causes this disease is that it's an abnormal protein, which has been dubbed a prion or prion. This agent is highly resistant to heat, ultraviolet light, ionizing radiation, and even common disinfectants that normally inactivate viruses or bacteria. This agent causes no detectable immune or inflammatory response in the host and has not been observed microscopically. Its spread through the beef supply is generally thought to have resulted from the use of meat and bone meal put into the dairy feed in ever greater proportions after World War II to boost the protein content of that feed. It was believed that increasing the protein content of this feed would increase the growth of these animals and enrich their milk production. The reason for most of the concern about mad cow disease isn't that the cattle themselves are dying from it, but rather because the disease can be transmitted to humans through the consumption of infected beef. And this disease in humans manifests itself in a form called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, actually referred to as variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
And that's what infects humans?
Yes, something called variant CJD. There has been a more basic disease called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease that's been around for a long time, and that arises sporadically in the population. Typically about one person in a million contracts that disease. And there is no treatment for either the basic Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease or the variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Now, worldwide, there are about 153 people who are known to have died in the past several years from variant CJD. Until recently, it was believed that consuming BSE-infected meat had no relation to development of the form of classical CJD, but there's now some research in Great Britain that suggests otherwise. Also, it's known that there are some clusters of CJD in the United States. The most recent example involves seven people who apparently died of classical CJD in New Jersey. All of them had a link with a racetrack in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, where they ate, according to a report last month in the Philadelphia Inquirer. And most surprising about this is that one of the people who died was only 29 years old. This is extremely unusual because victims of classical Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease are typically older than 55. Before getting to our first guest, I would like to mention just a few facts that came out just about a month ago as a result of an investigation by United Press International. And these revelations are about the testing that has been done by the government of the United States over the last few years. In this UPI investigation, they found that the tests for BSE-infected cattle were done at fewer than 100 of the 700 slaughterhouses. The testing was voluntary, and some of the nation's biggest slaughterhouses, even those processing 5,000 head a day, did no testing at all. The four states that accounted for 70% of all beef. Nebraska, Texas, Kansas, and Colorado accounted for only 11% of these tests. Part of this study by the UPI also focused on dairy cattle and the testing of them. And they found that in the top four dairy slaughtering states, anyway, they looked at the testing in the four major dairy slaughtering states, Wisconsin, California, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota. These states slaughter about 1.7 million dairy cows each year. That's about 67% of the 2.6 million animals butchered annually in the United States. And so what they found in these dairy slaughtering states was that something like less than one half of 1% of the more than 3.4 million dairy cows processed over the two-year period were actually tested. And they went on to say that the actual percentage may be even lower because presumably not all of these animals were even dairy cows. There might have been some beef cattle in there, which were at lower risk anyway. Another statistic coming out of here, which is very, very interesting, is that in 2003, there were more than 1,000 animals tested for BSE, which were less than 24 months in age. And they pointed out that the test for BSE cannot even detect the disease in cattle less than that age, presumably because the number of prions has not built up sufficiently to be detected. So here, look at the situation. We're only testing about 20,000 head of cattle in the United States, and 1,000 of those tests are conducted on animals from which the test could not even detect the disease if it were present. And here is something even more interesting and brings us to our first guest. The Department of Agriculture's records of mad cow screenings showed that between 2001 and 2003, there were no animals tested at Vern's Moses Lake Meats in Washington State, which is the slaughter facility at which the mad cow was detected last December. That then brings us to Dave Louthan, if we have him on the line.
I'm here, all right.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
Good, good, good. I understand you're traveling today.
I am. I'm headed down to Sacramento. I'm going to talk to the legislators down there about all this mess.
That's great. I was just telling our listeners that there's some results from an investigation by the United Press International showing that there were no tests on mad cows at your slaughter facility for 2 years really prior to when you discovered the mad cow. When did you actually start testing there at Vern's Meats?
Well, we started doing it about the last week in October. It took about, let's see. Now, they're saying we took 250 tests. I say we took less than 100. There's some paperwork in there that we haven't got paid for yet because they can't decide how many we took yet because they're not sure how many they threw away. But I say we took less than 100 because that's kind of our slow season right there. So we don't do all that many cows, you know, if it's not too hot and it's not too cold. You know, the weather don't knock these cows down. We don't get them.
You only tested about 100 cows then from October to when to end of December. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my ballpark figure guess. But there's a lot of people that are going to argue with you. But anyway, even if we went by their number of 250, which I don't think we did 250, but even if we went by that number and have found one that fast, it's kind of scary to me.
Well, yeah, certainly. What was the situation like with this cow? I believe it was on the 9th of December. And your account of that experience differs significantly from what the USDA spokespeople put out when the mad cow test came back positive on, I think, the 23rd of December. They were saying that this was a downer cow, that is, a cow that was down on the ground, not capable of getting up, not capable of walking. And you then went to the press and said that was not the case.
That's exactly right. Now, here's what happened. Now, we're over at Vern's, we're primarily a downer plant. That's all we do, downers and cripples and just, you know, whatever you can get for 10 cents a pound, really. And so every now and then we do get a walking cow in there, you know, if the dairy's got three or four downers. And if he's got a walker on there that's not producing, he'll throw that on the trailer, too. So we get walkers, but primarily we're a downer plant. You know, 90% of what we do is downers. So on that day, we had a trailer full of walkers that come from the sale yard, a bunch of them, they were all right. The second trailer that come in, was a trailer full of downers, and I had 11 cows on there and one walking. The first two cows, there was two cows and three cows on the back step. One of them was already dead when it got there, or virtually dead anyway. It was in a coma. We put it out of its misery right then and there. And then we did one downer, then we did one that was kind of down and kind of crippled. You know, it could get its front end up and not its back end because its legs were broken or something, you know. Old dairy cows have a lot of trouble with their hind ends anyway. So then I open up the compartment to the next compartment. Here's this big white cow standing there. Not a bad-looking cow, you know, for us. I mean, I guess if you saw her out in the pasture, she wouldn't look too good, but for us, it was a nice cow. I asked the driver, I said, hey, that's a nice cow. Whose cow is this? He told me it's a Sunny Dean cow. I said, oh, right on. Now, we always do the downers first, and if we got any walkers, we do the walkers because the USDA vet's there just to do the downers. And there's a vet and an inspector. Now, the inspector can check all the walkers if he finds something wrong. He'll tag it, and then the vet comes back. He'll check it. So, at any rate, now the vet's out there, and this cow is standing on the back of the trailer, and ordinarily, what I'd do is unload this cow and run it around the truck and put it in the pens, and it would come up as a walker. So now the driver starts poking on this cow with a hot shot. He wants it to get out of the trailer so I can move it on around. Well, this cow got other ideas, you know. It starts looking around. I can see it's fixing to turn around and run back into the front of that trailer and stomp on all them down cows in there. So I asked Doc, you seen this cow yet? And he says, yeah, I've seen enough. I shot that cow right there on the back of the trailer, good walking cow. Chained her up, sent her inside. We did the rest of the cows that day, and that was the end of that. So it was a fine walking cow. Now, 2 weeks later, 24th of December, I noticed that we had a lot of cows that day. I noticed first thing in the morning, the USDA is running back and forth to the front office with armloads of paperwork, and they look scared. And I'm not kidding. They look like they see a ghost. My boss is running back. Everybody's red-faced. I cornered the inspector. I said, what's going on? He says, I can't tell you about it, but something's going on. It took me about an hour working on him before he finally told me what was going on. He said, we had a mad cow. I said, a mad cow down here? And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is the end of my job. All the killing's going to stop. USDA is going to stop all the killing in the United States. Everybody's going to shut the borders, you know, just like happened in England. You know, that's the end of the killing until you figure out what to do. Well, that day, he didn't tell me which cow it was that day on the 24th. He wouldn't tell me what cow. He just said we had a mad cow. Now, Christmas came, Christmas went. Now it's 26th, and I'm in there. We got a lot of cows that day, too. So I'm still working on the inspector trying to find out what cow it is. Finally, he tells me, he says it was a Sunny Dean cow. And as soon as he said it was a Sunny Dean cow, I knew exactly which cow he was talking about. You know, we had a couple of Sunny Dean cows in that trailer, three of them, I guess. But as soon as he said that, I knew in my head which cow that was. I asked him what the number was. He told me. I went up and checked the kill sheet. It was that cow, a walking cow. It had no symptoms whatsoever. The only thing wrong with this cow, it had a little bit of blood on its tail because it had a calving problem, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of times they'll come in there for that. And so I'm thinking, man, I'm asking the inspector now, are we going to keep killing these cows? What are we going to do, test everything now? What are we going to do? And he says, we're waiting for a phone call from Washington, D.C. So we hadn't really got into killing yet. So finally he comes back there and he tells me, go ahead and start killing, but you can't kill the downers because we're not going to kill any more downers. And I ask, why are we going to kill no more downers? He says, because the USDA has decided to end the BSE problem, we're going to stop killing downers. Right at that moment, my whole life flashed before my eyes. I'm telling you, it changed drastically, 100%. My eyes popped out. My ears turned red. My face was red. My heart was pounding because I knew exactly what they had just said. You know, they said we're going to not kill any more downers, which we were only supposed to be testing the downers. So what they actually said was, we're not going to be taking any more BSE tests. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I told them that was a walking cow. So I went up and told the chief. I said, that was a walking cow. The chief says, I know that was a walking cow, but let's work along with them. The USDA's in charge here, and we'll figure it out. Now, the plant was full of Washington, D.C., USDA people. FDA was there. USDA was there. There was only three people on the kill floor that day. And there were seven of these government guys following me around. They wanted to check our procedures. They were watching me butcher these cows, the ones that we had. We had a few walkers. We had a whole bunch of downers out there, but we had a few walkers. I was working on those, and I had all these guys standing behind me watching me cut these cows, and I'm thinking to myself, what is going on here? So I'm asking the inspector, I said, did you tell these guys that was a walking cow? And he says, well, no, it was a down cow. And I said, no, it was a walking cow. He says, no, the vet's paperwork says it was a down cow. And I said, wait a minute. this is a cover-up. This is a conspiracy. I told the government guys who were standing there, hey, I don't work for the government. I'm not going to be part of no cover-up. This ain't going to work. It's not going to happen. Not today. Not ever. I'm not going to let this happen. I went up and told the chief what was going on. He says, just work along with them. They know what they're doing. Just work along with them. I look out the front door. I see there's a news truck parked out there at the end of the cable. There's a cable gate, and at the end of the driveway, they got the news truck out there. They've got the press locked out. I went back and told it. I told the chief, I said, why do you have the media locked out? He says, well, we don't want them in here. I said, no, you do want them in here. You don't want to look like you're part of this cover-up. I'm telling you right now, bring them in here, put a knife in their hand, let them help me kill these cows. We'll show them how killing works. We'll show them how we were going right by the regulations. We've done nothing wrong. We have nothing to hide. He goes, no, we don't want that. Because now I'm stewing. I see what's going on. You know, this is a huge government cover-up. So lunchtime comes along. I said, I can no longer keep my mouth shut. That's just the way I am. I got a big mouth anyway. So I went out at lunchtime. I went out the front door. I heard my boss behind me squeak because he seen me headed for that news truck, and he knew what I was going to do. I headed straight to the media, and I said, I work in there. What do you want to know? And they said, the USDA says this is a down cow, and killing no more down cows was going to solve the problem. I said, it was not a down cow. It was a good walking cow, a big white one. And they said, the USDA said that this cow was slaughtered, but its meat had not entered the food chain. And I said, of course it's in the food chain. It's meat. Where else would it be? You know, you can't build a house with it. You can't paint with it. It's meat. It's in the food chain. It's been eaten.
Hey, Dave, let me ask you a question. You said that 90% of the cows that you slaughter at your facility are downer cows. Is that right?
Yeah, 90% of them.
And all of the cattle that are slaughtered at your facility enter the human food supply?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, unless they're condemned, unless the USDA condemns them right there on the kill floor, they get loaded into a truck, they get taken to Midway in Chehalis, which is over on the coast. Those people bone them out, put them in cardboard totes, put them back on the very truck that brought them the carcasses, and they run them down here to Interstate Meat and Willamette Meat, and they're ground into hamburger and packaged up for the grocery stores.
Now, those down cows are presumably no longer going into the food supply, though. They're going somewhere else. They're going to a rendering plant, maybe getting turned into feed for poultry or pigs or pet food.
Well, here's the deal. Now, right after that, they said no more downers are going into the food chain except animals injured in transportation. And so now this is during that time period right after that cow was killed. Now, our boss had got into some trouble earlier in the year, like in February or April, because PETA and a news channel was over at the other slaughterhouse that we kind of are connected to. They're not part of us. We're kind of business partners with them. They were over there with cameras and stuff trying to catch them torturing down cows. So they stopped killing down cows over there. They sent us all their down cows. And the Safeway and Yokes and all these other guys said, we don't want any hamburger made from down cows ever again because of the humane issue. We don't want to lose business and look bad. And so all the downers came over here. And then all the drivers signed these contracts, and we signed contracts with Midway saying we wouldn't kill any more downers. But the fact is, we weren't killing downers. We were killing downers that fell. We were killing cows that were injured in transportation. Mm-hmm. So the driver would drag these cows onto his trailer at the various dairies, bring them to us. The USDA vet would go out there, and I'm talking about all during January. We'd go out there, he'd say, why are these downers here? They're not killing downers. And the driver would say, hey, these cows all walked on. They fell down on the way over here. And the USDA would say, okay, that's fine. They're not downers. They're just injured in transportation. So we kept killing those downers. Okay, now the USDA switched it to, now they're not even doing cows that are injured in transportation. You know, I got laid off, you know, just a few days after that because I got whistleblower's disease. So I did because... Now, after, let me tell you why that happened. After I got done talking to the media, yeah, we had a couple of slow days there, and it was New Year's, and the holidays and the weekends were falling out. There was just a couple of days I worked. January 4th, it was a Sunday, and I had been stewing for a week or two now about trying to figure out how to stop this mess. You know, I see them killing these cows. They're going into the food chain. We know they're bad now. We know they're diseased.
And these are not down cows.
Well, that cow I killed, I see that down cow thing is totally irrelevant.
Right.
That cow I killed wasn't down. I know they're not down cows because I got that cow all over me. January 4th, I was sitting there Sunday. My sweetheart had rented a computer because she liked to poke around on the Internet, and I said, let me use your computer for a minute. And I went to the USDA pages. I know there's a spot in there where you could get a hold of all the inspectors. Their email addresses are in there. And I thought to myself, who of all the people in the world would care what's going on here about these guys pumping this bad meat out? I said, the inspectors, you know. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't know anything about newspapers and reporters in those days. I'm an expert now. In those days, I had no idea. So I started sending out these emails. The lists are in alphabetical order. I sent emails to everybody with the letter A, the letter B. I got halfway through the letter C when the computer turned itself off, and I couldn't get back into that particular website. But in the meantime, I had sent out 200 or 300 emails to the inspectors that said something effective. Are you just going to sit there with your hands in your pocket while I invent them and spread this poison meat around the world? You know, no mm-hmm. downers means no more BSE testing, period. So, you know, to sit still and not say anything is without honor, and it's criminal, and you need to get up and say, hey, these cows are bad.
Dave, yeah. I got to ask you a question. Ann Veneman, she appeared on the NBC Today show in late December. And I have a quote here from her, and I just like your opinion as to what you think of that.
Okay.
She said, the fact of the matter is that all scientific evidence would show, based upon what we know about this disease, that muscle cuts, that is, the meat of the animal itself, should not cause any risk to human health. And that's a direct quote.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
This is how I countered that. Now, every move you've seen the USDA, every time you see them change their stance, that's been me behind it, because I have been kicking their butts. Every time they say a lie, I counter it. Now, I got a lot of friends in the paper. But here's the deal on the meat cuts. Now, several scientists say you can get it from the meat cuts. Now, I'm no scientist, but I am a meat man. I'm a cow killer, and I know how to kill cows, and I'm really good at it. Now, here's the thing. Every cow in America, you've heard of a side of beef? Here's how they get a side of beef. A side of beef is half a cow. Here's how they get two halves of a cow. They got a bandsaw hanging on the kill floor. Every kill floor in the world cuts their cows in half so you can cut them up. Take this bandsaw, it's big, and the cow's hanging by its back legs upside down. And you cut down the middle of this backbone of these cows, you saw right down the exact center of the spine, right through the center of the spinal cord, and that's a cut 6 to 8 feet long. And you got hot water jets that sprays hot water on the blade so the saw won't gunk up with fat and jam up. So you got hot water running all over this cow, and you got the blade's got big teeth like a big wood cutting saw, and it's ripping out chunks of spinal cord, fat, blood, bone dust. All this is mixing into a slurry that's running down the inside of the cow, the outside of the cow. Now, if this cow's got BSE, that carcass is really contaminated. I mean, really contaminated. And so that carcass goes into the cooler. They chill it. When it's chilled, they bring it out. They quarter it up. And the butcher starts cutting on it. He takes his knife or his saw, which depends on what kind of piece he's working on. And when he pushes that through the outside of that cow into the inside, his blade carries that contamination right across the surface of that steak, that roast. Whatever piece he's cutting on becomes contaminated. There's no such thing as a safe cut of meat. Contamination never, ever misses an opportunity. Not ever. That's why they call it contamination. If you're eating a high-dollar filet mignon and you're thinking you're safe, you're making a mistake, because that's just pure spinal cord smeared across there.
Have you quit eating beef, Dave?
I've tried. I really have tried. I mean, I used to eat. That's all I used to eat. I mean, I don't eat vegetables, maybe a potato. That's all I was eating. But, you know, I get, and I'm only human, and I curse myself. I see myself walking into the McDonald's to get one of them mad cow sandwiches, and I say, you're such an idiot. It's going to kill you. But, you know, I walk in there anyway because, you know, what else am I going to eat? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to make anything out of tofu. I get really tired of broccoli and potatoes, you know. And that's just the way America is. That's why the beef prices haven't fallen off, because we don't know what else to eat. Curse myself for it.
Hey, Dave, can you hang on the line a little while? We've got a second guest, Dr. Michael Greger, who's going to talk about some of the health issues. Our guests today are Dave Louthan, the slaughterhouse worker who killed the mad cow last December, and Dr. Michael Greger, who is a national expert on mad cow disease.
I think I lost Dave, but I have Dr. Greger on the phone, I believe. Dr. Greger?
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Greger. Just to say a few words of introduction about you, Dr. Greger is a graduate of the Cornell University School of Agriculture and the Tufts University School of Medicine. He is the chief BSE investigator for Farm Sanctuary and mad cow coordinator for the Organic Consumers Association. Dr. Greger has been speaking publicly about mad cow disease since 1993. He has debated the National Cattlemen's Beef Association before the FDA and was invited as an expert witness at the Oprah Winfrey infamous meat defamation trial. He has contributed to many books and articles on the subject, continues to lecture extensively, and currently runs the Mad Cow Disease website for the Organic Consumers Association. Dr. Greger, shortly after that Washington State cow was diagnosed with BSE, the USDA's chief veterinarian, Dr. Ron DeHaven, made a statement that, quote, there is no scientific evidence to suggest that the disease is transmitted from mother to offspring, unquote. We do know that it's been transmitted through contaminated feed to these animals, but what is your view on whether the disease can be transmitted from mother to offspring?
Well, first, I don't know if Dave's still on the line, but I just want to thank him for his incredible courage and integrity. He has certainly been an integral part of trying to put pressure on the government to stop some of its risky cannibalistic feeding practices that spread this disease. And I think that's the real, that's the important means of spread. Whether or not it's actually spread vertically, meaning from mother to offspring, is controversial. Probably happens very rarely. But where we know that it's spread by cannibalistic feeding practices, by feeding cows to calves, by feeding cattle blood to calves. These are the kind of risky practices that we've been doing for decades here in this country, and that's what our biggest concern is in terms of spreading this disease throughout the cattle population in the United States and then by extension into the human population.
Dr. DeHaven further stated in December, and I'm quoting here, any of the tissues that would have gone for human consumption would be safe tissues, even if they came from an infected animal, unquote. Dave Louthan just spoke to that question from the point of view of a slaughterhouse worker, talking about how the actual slaughter practices could spread some of this infected nerve tissue across these other parts of the carcass, which would then be typically considered to be safe tissues. But is there anything that you can say about this issue, even beyond how slaughter practices might spread this disease?
The highest risk meat in the United States, beyond like scrambled beef brands, is what's called advanced recovery system meat. So that's fast food pizza toppings, fast food taco fillings, beef jerky, ground beef, hot dogs, cold cuts, these kind of cheap processed meats, because this can has historically contained bits of spinal cord, which no one argues isn't the most infective part of the animal, including the brain. Now, lower down on the hierarchy of risk is what's called beef on the bone. So, for example, when you get a T-bone steak, that T is actually a vertebrae. It's actually part of the backbone of the animal, so it has a slice of spinal cord and big nerve roots coming out into the meat. And so that's like T-bone steak, porterhouse, etc. Then lower down on the risk hierarchy is boneless cuts of meat like rump roast, etc. Now, as Dave very eloquently and graphically described, that meat can be contaminated with central nervous system tissue, brain and spinal cord. But even if it wasn't, we now have evidence coming out of Stanley Prusiner's lab at UCSF. He's won the Nobel Prize in Medicine for his discovery of prions, that indeed even muscle tissue itself may be infectious, and obviously there's blood and peripheral nerve in that meat as well. The second way in which that meat, so even a steak, can be contaminated by central nervous system tissue, the riskiest tissue just packed with these deadly prions, are the captive bolt stunning, which is the predominant method. We render cattle unconscious before their throats are slit and they're bled out. And that, we know from the human trauma literature that people who don't wear seatbelts, for example, who get in automobile accidents and suffer head trauma end up with what's called brain emboli, pieces of brain in other parts of their body. And so these Texas A&M researchers said, wait a second, well, the way we stun animals unconscious is basically use an explosive charge and kind of implode the cranial vault of these animals. So they wondered if the same thing happened in animals, and indeed, they found a 14-centimeter piece of brain in one poor cow's lung and basically concluded that there are these prions, there's brain tissue basically found throughout the animal's body, the bodies of animals stunned for slaughter. So even that piece of steak can have tiny plugs of brain in it as well. And so we don't know the risk of American beef because we're not doing enough testing, but I certainly encourage my patients, better safe than sorry, and to remove beef from their diet, kind of err on the side of caution.
I think we have Dave back.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to also ask Dr. Greger about this ban on the feed in 1997. There's some reports coming out that the enforcement of this was very lax, and also the even the study of the enforcement has been lax. And I just wonder, is there anything you can say about that? This was the
Yeah, there is. Let me tell you what goes into our rendering truck.
Okay.
We put in there, sheep parts and pig parts and cow parts and all that. When it's just about full, it leaves our little establishment, and it goes over to the dog pound. When it gets to the dog pound, they dump in 3 or 4 50-gallon barrels of dead dogs and cats. When they get that dumped in, it goes over to the chicken farm. And then the chicken farm, they dump in dumpster, however much room they got left, of dead chickens and dead chicken fecal. And so that all goes into the same truck. It all gets dumped into the same hole. It goes up the same auger, into the same cooker, and it goes off the same feed factory. They're doing it because it's high dollar. There's nobody watching it. There's no reason not to do it. It would take a pretty honest businessman to throw away that kind of money.
Is there anything else you can add to that, Dr. Greger?
Yes, and once again, I don't know if Dave was on the line when I said I just wanted to thank Dave so much for his courage and integrity. For doing his part in revealing the lies that are coming out from our government. But indeed, 2001, the FDA did kind of a national looking into the surveillance practices. Indeed, up to a quarter of the rendering plants and feed mills were in violation of the 1997 feed regulations. We must realize these are only really labeling requirements. So any feed containing cattle remains must be labeled, do not feed to cows or other ruminants. And so you can still produce this stuff, you can still sell this stuff, any farmer can walk in any feed store, still buy it, no one asks them, wait a second, you're just feeding this to cows, you're feeding this to pigs and chickens too. And so as difficult as it has been to enforce this among the industry, it's really impossible to enforce it among our nation's estimated 1 million livestock producers. There's zero enforcement on the ranch, zero policing on the farm.
Even though we have this ban of feeding rendered cows to cows, I understand that they can still feed rendered cows to poultry, and that the poultry litter can then be fed back to cows. Is this true?
So just to explain what poultry litter is a mix of, is basically what you scrape up from the from broiler sheds, which is the excrement, the chicken droppings, the chicken feces, spilled bedding, feathers, etc. And we feed about a million tons of those bird droppings back to cattle every year. In fact, industry studies suggest that the flesh of cows fed chicken feces is actually more tender and juicy than cows fed other feed. But it's really, I think, comes down to cost. It's a disposal problem that's cured and makes for cheap feed. Now, January 26th, the FDA did come out and said that they are going to ban the feeding of not only blood to calves, but ban the feeding of feces to calves and cows as well.
Are there any loopholes in that?
Well, if it's enforced, I mean, it's very important. I mean, the reason why this is way too little, way too late, is because we still allow the feeding of slaughterhouse waste to pigs, pets, and poultry, and then we take those animals and grind them up, as Dave said, and that goes back into cattle feed. And so there's this kind of indirect cannibalism circuit. This stuff should not be on the shelves. This stuff shouldn't be sold. We should, you know, incinerate it and bury it in special landfills like they do around the rest of the world. That's what the United Nations is calling for. That's what our USDA's own panel of experts is calling for. That's what the World Health Organization has been calling for. It's outrageous that we continue to place the American public at risk to save a few pennies for these powerful industries.
It's my understanding that they can still feed cow blood to pigs, and that then pig blood can be fed back to cattle and calves. It would seem like that might provide a route for the disease to get back to cattle as well.
Well, the biggest concern was that we were weaning calves off cow blood. I mean, the question arises, why would you feed a calf their mother's blood when you can just feed them their mother's milk? Well, that's because that's our milk, right? The milk belongs on the shelves. Well, then what does the calf get? I mean, the cow has to have a calf or she doesn't produce any milk. And so, well, the calf gets milk replacer, which too often contains spray-dried cattle blood as a protein-rich component. Now, of course, this blood is popularly fed to other animals like young pigs. you know, cows won't eat feed composed of more than like 10% blood because they can like taste it and don't like it. But evidently chickens will eat feed containing up to 35% blood by weight, and they just peck away very happy. Again, these are cheap protein sources for these animals. The problem is we now know that blood can be infectious. We just had 2 months ago the first human form of mad cow disease contracted, we think, through a blood transfusion over in Britain. And because you can't test for these prions in the blood supply, they've had to kind of dump their entire blood supply. Now they're importing blood from the U.S. But that's what we are, you know, that's the gamble that our government is taking. We could, you know, lose our blood supply. You know, we could not guarantee the safety of the surgical instruments. I mean, this is a huge, huge deal, all because we're protecting the narrow business interests of these powerful lobbies.
Another loophole here that I've heard about, and I'd like you to comment on this, Dr. Greger, is that the brains and spinal cords from cattle under 30 months of age continue to be allowed in the American food supply, even though BSE infection has been found in the brains of cattle as young as 20 months. And this report went on to say that in the U.S., the brains, eyes, and spinal cords from cattle under 30 months can be rendered to produce products identified as beef stock, beef extract, and beef flavoring without any identification of the source materials other than beef.
No, that's very important. What they do is they basically, you know, you're left with this kind of bloody skeleton, which is boiled to make these kind of beef flavorings. In fact, it can even be not even defined. It doesn't even have to have the word beef. It can have a, just be called natural flavorings. And so even vegetarians who think they're not eating, you know, products made out of beef brains may get something that says natural flavors on it, but may indeed be, you know, boiled beef brains. Of course, as you mentioned earlier in the show, there's basically no temperature at which you can kill these prions, that these prions seem to be able to resist temperatures even high, even like incineration at hot enough, at temperatures hot enough to melt lead. So it's nothing you can do to boil these pathogenic organisms out of your food supply, and that's one of the reasons they're so scary. So yes, indeed, in other countries, this stuff is treated as the toxic waste it is. Brains and spinal cords in a country that has mad cow disease should be incinerated and placed in special landfills. It should not be fed to pigs, pets, and poultry, and certainly should not be fed to human beings.
What's the deal with milk? Of course, there's a big concern that the dairy cows are at the highest risk because they are slaughtered at a much greater age than cattle raised for beef. They have also been the animals which have been fed this rendered feed over the years, although that was allegedly stopped in 97, but may have continued because there was lax enforcement. And so is there any possibility that these prions could be coming through the milk of these animals?
Now, the World Health Organization has come out and said that milk is safe. At the same time, they've said that one shouldn't eat any infected tissues, any tissues from an infected animal, including milk. And the reason they're kind of waffling on that issue is we have actually very little information. There is this disturbing report in 1990, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, of this tragic case of this Japanese woman who died with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and her colostrum, or first milk, was found infectious into mice, into experimental mice. So just because human prions can kill mice, does that mean that bovine prions can kill people through milk? I mean, we basically have no idea. I would put that, you know, very low on the risk, on the hierarchy of risk. You know, there'd be a lot of other things I'd cut out of my diet before I'd worry about the milk, but it does present a theoretical risk for prion contamination.
There's been some studies lately about the possible misdiagnosis of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, some suggestion that Alzheimer's cases are being misdiagnosed. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Neuropathologists are paranoid. No one wants to do autopsies on atypical dementia cases because you have to, like, come in a spacesuit and you can't sterilize your instruments. But a few intrepid researchers have gone back and looked at presumed Alzheimer's deaths, meaning it said Alzheimer's on the death certificate. But when you actually look at these cases, between 3% and 13%, depending on what study you look at, were actually not, they hadn't died of Alzheimer's at all. They had actually died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And we do have new research now, including that just published last week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, this Italian research that suggests that even some of these cases of CJD attacking the elderly that look and can be misdiagnosed as Alzheimer's disease may indeed be caused by eating infected meat as well.
That's fascinating to me. Now, isn't it true that Alzheimer's and CJD are, the pathology is quite similar and they cause brain lesions?
Actually, I mean, while there is some overlap, one can determine on autopsy one from another. The problem is often people don't get autopsies. Autopsy rates are way down in this country. And so I encourage any listeners that if you know anyone dying, any families with anyone dying of Alzheimer's disease, to try to encourage them to strongly consider getting an autopsy to make sure that their family member didn't die of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That's very important information to know because we need to track this disease. We need to know whether it's going up, whether it's going down, whether it's attacking different age groups. It's outrageous that it's still not a notifiable disease, meaning that doctors don't have to report it to state health departments. And because of that, we don't know what's happening to the incidence in this country.
So what's your recommendation then to people who still want to eat beef? What can they do to at least minimize their risk?
Again, they can stay away from the kind of cheap processed meats that I talked about, fast food taco fillings and pizza toppings and hot dog and hamburger meat, mm-hmm. etc. And also, I mean, probably the least risk beef in the United States is organic beef because by law, federal organic standards mean that those cows cannot have eaten any slaughterhouse waste, cannot be have fed any slaughterhouse byproducts, which is where these cows get the disease. Now, unfortunately, those cows are then taken and slaughtered in the same slaughterhouses that conventional cattle are killed in, and so there's a concern about contamination with the saw and equipment. But these slaughterhouse plants tend to try to slaughter the organic cattle in the morning, so there's less gross contamination. But again, while one cannot guarantee the absence of risk for organic beef, it's probably the lowest risk.
And what about consuming other types of meat, such as chickens, pigs, farmed fish, which themselves may have been fed infected, rendered meat from cows?
Well, indeed, to this day, we continue to feed our farm-raised salmon and other fish blood meal, pellets made out of cattle blood, etc. There's basically, if you eat anything with a brain, there's at least a theoretical risk of coming down with these types of diseases. You know, this disease is the only disease for which two Nobel Prizes have ever been awarded. And the first Nobel Prize went to a guy named Gajdacek, who was quoted on Dateline NBC as saying, it's got to be in the pigs as well as the cattle. It's got to be passing through the chickens. And there's seriously there's a serious concern that pigs and poultry could be what they call silent carriers of this disease and passing it on to human beings. And we know, for example, that pigs are susceptible, at least in a laboratory setting, with mad cow disease. And so, I mean, there certainly is a theoretical risk. Now, having said that, there's no such thing as mad broccoli disease. even if you eat a head of broccoli, there's really no problem. But beyond that, we don't know, and until we know more, people may want to question what they put on their grocery list.
Dr. Greger, is there a website or some way that people can learn more about who you are and what you do and your writings about mad cow?
For people who want to stay on top of this volatile issue, I encourage people to go to the website of the Organic Consumers Association, which is at organicconsumers.org, and we have posted a lot of Dave's writings and certainly has my reports on there as well.
Thanks a lot for being on the show, Dr. Greger.
Thank you.
This is Bill Houston and
Mike Hudak
saying
good night.